Good morning, everyone. And a big, big welcome to Bina 2017. Hopefully it's going to be a really exciting year, a good year. While we're on that topic, actually, you'll hear about it in the next few months, and we'll do a major function or a celebration later on in the year. But actually, Bina this year is entering into its 20th year. So yeah, so it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey from very small beginnings. But we'll talk about that at a different time. I wonder if just also, first of all, before I start, just to thank everyone for their wonderful wishes, for all the Mazel Tovs, which thank God have been flowing in. And just tell you that I think some of you saw on Facebook and were following me, but we had a most absolutely incredible trip into Israel over January, which we then had to cut a little bit short because my daughter decided to get engaged in New York, but that's a different story. But doesn't matter for good things. So yeah, that was amazing. Hopefully, maybe with the time when it's appropriate, I'll share some of the stuff with you, but it was really absolutely incredible. One more just quick announcement is that, just to make a note, obviously we're starting today this new series called Mindfulness Applied. We're going to go for 6 weeks till the 9th of March. It was going to go a bit longer, but it's going to go till the 9th of March because then we're traveling back for the wedding, please God, to New York. So it'll be till the 9th of March. Okay, so I wanted to begin just by sharing the origin of this series, actually how the series came about. We've done stuff on mindfulness before. Most of you will remember. And then I think it was 2 terms ago, I was doing a night short series on mindfulness in Kuji, for the Kuji community. And we talked about mindfulness and the concepts to do with mindfulness, as we've discussed many times. Things like being present, maximizing the power of the now, and so on. And of course, one of the things that came into it, as we'll talk about a bit more later, is the concept of letting go of the baggage of the past and the worries of the future. We talked about, if you remember, I discussed that saying, that Hebrew saying, where we talk about ha'avar ayin, the past has gone, the future hasn't yet come, the present is only a fleeting moment, so da'agam inayin, why is there room for worry? And all these concepts about not letting the past and the future interfere with the now, and being able to let go of control, let go of the worry, let go of the anxiety, and so on and so forth. So we talked about this, and the theories are great, of course, and then a couple people came up to me afterwards and said, that's all great, but you haven't really explained how. You've said what, but you haven't said how. In other words, how do you do it? It's all very nice. How do you let go of the past? What does that mean? That's so hard. Like, how do you let go of baggage? How do you let go of stuff not to interfere? Don't forget, we live in a very distracted world. We've talked about this before as well. We do hang on to stuff. We hang on to a lot of stuff. We all tend to do that. We're all in the same boat here. We have a lot of stuff that comes into us which we tend to hang on to. And how do we actually get into it? Because, you know, sometimes we have the theory, right? We have the theory. We have the theory on many levels. We have, from a Jewish point of view, the theories are very strong. We've talked about the concept of emunah bitachon, trusting in God, letting go, giving up control, letting God run the world. We've talked about our own self-esteem, not letting things that people say to us get in the way and sort of block us from progressing and growing. But, you know, sometimes we suffer what we call paralysis of the mind. The mind is a mind where all kinds of thoughts come into our mind, sometimes very hard to block, sometimes not willingly, they just come in. We'll talk about this a bit later. And we are anxious sometimes, and we are worried, and we have sometimes feeling of resentment and jealousy and things that are very difficult to let go. And the question is, how do we let go? How do we let it go? How do we let go all the stuff so we can be fully present and fully mindful and not let those thoughts and those emotions that come from the thoughts get in the way? I don't know if I've mentioned this before, you know, talking about mindfulness, there's a story of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mention it particularly because his Yahrzeit is this coming Monday, the 10th of Shvat. A famous story which his son-in-law, the Rebbe, told, actually, that one time he was in Russia, and he was in his town where he was, and he needed to take a train to the capital city, where he was going to have a very, very important political meeting with the political people in charge at the time. And it was a meeting that was very critical to the well-being of the Jewish community. And it was like its success, a lot hung on its success, put it that way. And any normal person would have been extremely anxious and nervous about making sure you get to the meeting on time, making sure you're very well prepared for the meeting, and so on and so forth. And the Rebbe told the story that he came into the previous Rebbe, his father-in-law's study, minutes before the train was due to leave and he had to go to the station, and he saw him in a state of complete calmness, sitting and studying and doing something completely unrelated, fully there, fully absorbed, as if there was no meeting, there was no problem. And when the time would come, he would go to the station. And he said that he was himself a surprise, and he turned to his father-in-law, he said, you know, I know good time management and good sort of being present, but like that's extreme. How do you manage to do that? And he said to him, he talked to him about the concept of Hatzlacha Bizman, which essentially loosely traded is like good time management. In other words, the concept of living in the moment, being fully present of where you are, and not letting something that has to happen in 20 minutes from now, or even or half an hour from now, get in the way. Now, it's great. It's a great theory. But how do you do that? I mean, I don't know if we can reach that level of extreme. Maybe that's reserved for the great people. But even on some level, on some little bit of a level, how do we do that? How do we let go? That was the question, and that was sort of, they said to me, you've got to do a second series of follow-up and strategies. And I thought that was a good idea, because I suffer from the same question, as we all do. I can get up here and say the theory. I'm not sure we always implement it that well, but that is important to have a look, take it to the next level, to have a look at some of the strategies and some of the processes that we have to go through to actually put it into practice. So we're going to look at a multi components of this concept, and of course it's like a puzzle. We'll build it up over a few weeks, so I'm not promising any strategies today. Today we'll just lay the groundwork and talk about a few introductions, but we'll talk about some strategies today, but really it's part of a big picture. It's part of a puzzle, and hopefully over the next few weeks we're going to try and put together the whole puzzle as best as we can. So just to summarize before we continue, the whole issue. So we know what the concept is, right? We know from a Jewish point of view, we've talked about things like Moach Shalit Al Halev, the brain rules the heart. That's the uniqueness of the human being. We said this many times, that although we have emotions, but the human being has the power to make decisions based on the brain, that our brain should be able to rule the heart. We know that unique to the human being is that we have free choice. We choose our responses. We've talked many times about the concept of what the Talmud tells us, everything is in hands of heaven except for fear of heaven. In other words, we choose our moral responses. We choose how we respond and react to what goes on outside of us. We've talked about the concept that Hashgacha Pratit, that what is beyond our control is beyond our control, and God runs the world, and we need to let Him do that. He knows what He's doing. We don't always understand it, but He's got a plan, and therefore we need to let Him run the show and give up control, which is a very difficult thing to do. But really, what we want to try and establish is, we know the theory, we want to try and understand how do we do it. So before I outline the approach that we're going to take over the next few weeks, I want to just review the key concepts of mindfulness so we know where we're going, where we're coming from, right? So we've talked about mindfulness as being something where you pay attention on purpose. In other words, first of all, mindfulness means the ability to actually be aware and focus on what you're doing, not let things go by you just without even noticing them, but paying attention, mindfully paying attention on purpose, right? And that, of course, leads into the next thing, which is being fully present in the now. In order to be able to maximize the full potential of the present experience, being there, being fully there in the moment, which is now. We also talked about, if you remember, the concept of the beginner's mind, right? The beginner's mind is a very, very key concept in mindfulness, and I'm just summarizing very quickly so we can just understand the context. The beginner's mind is this idea that every moment is a fresh moment. Now, we talked about this idea being linked very strongly into a Jewish idea, which we say every day in our prayers, Hamechadesh betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereshit, which means that God renews the creation every single day. We have this concept, this Kabbalistic idea, that every moment God is recreating the universe. So that in fact, even though sometimes the universe or the world seems like a place which is so complex and so full of complications, you just have to open up the news or listen to the radio or TV just for 2 minutes and you'll see how complicated the place is. But nevertheless, really we know underneath it all, there's a freshness of every moment. Every moment has a new opportunity. Every moment in terms of our potential and our opportunity is not linked to the moment before, and it's not dependent on what happened yesterday or even last hour. It really doesn't matter. In other words, every moment God gives us a fresh start. God gives us a fresh world, a fresh beginning, a new opportunity. That's the concept of the beginner's mind. And then, of course, we also talked about the idea of being non-judgmental of the present, which is really what we started to talk about before, which is that when you experience a now, even if you are aware of the now, right, you're aware of the present moment, but often we're aware of the present moment through the eyes of what we experienced till now. So we let the past get into the now. We're fully present in the now, we're fully here, but we judge the now based on what information or experience we had till now. And that's not proper mindfulness. Proper mindfulness means to be fully present in the now without judging of what happened before. Now, we talked about this at length when we did mindfulness. Of course, we have to learn from the past and we have to plan for the future. That's part of responsibility. We don't just live in the moment without worrying about the past and the future. We take responsibility for what we've done. We rectify things. We plan for the future. But things that are not in our control, we let go. We don't let it affect the way we maximize the moment of the now. That's really what it's all about. Now, before we go on, I just wanted to show you something, talking about being aware and learning to become aware. I just saw a little beautiful thing the other day on Facebook, so I just want to share it with you. Just sort of ties into the whole mindfulness, so we'll take a 2 minutes, just have a look at this, and then we'll go back to what we're trying to develop over here. I just thought that was a beautiful little clip because I just thought that was very representative of the world in general. We live in a world where everything is just flying by. You know, we're constantly in this busy subway station, rushing from one thing to another, and we don't. You know, I think we've talked about before this concept. I've been thinking about this a lot. One of the greatest prayers or sets of prayers that we have is something that the rabbis talked about 2,000 years ago composed, and that's called the morning blessings. It's something that's done right away early in the morning before regular mainstream prayer. And it's just simple blessings, thanking God for like the clothes we wear, for the ability to open up our eyes and see, to be able to walk, to have shoes. Just really my very simple things, because these are great blessings. And sometimes we experience greater blessings, sometimes smaller blessings, but we all have amazing things. We all have challenges, but we all have amazing things that we receive on a daily basis. It's a matter of being aware and stopping and fully experiencing it and noticing it, and not letting the hustle and bustle of the world go by and not being able even to notice the beauty of what is actually taking place. Okay. Now, In the discussion that we're going to have, we're going to, as I said, we're going to look for some practical strategies. But what we're also going to do is share some ideas. Obviously, doing what we always do, we're going to just share ideas, Torah ideas, proper Jewish concepts. But I'm also going to base, as a framework, I'm going to base stuff on a book by a guy called Russ Harris called The Reality Slap. It's a very, very good book. The particular book is based on a model called ACT, which is called Acceptance and Commitment Theory. I'm going to use some of the stuff from there. It's very, very good stuff. I spoke a little bit about it on the before the Shabbat project, if you remember correctly. We talked about Shabbat and mindfulness. Essentially, I'm going to talk about a bit later what it is, but it's a model which is connected to what they call today cognitive behavior theory, CBT, which is dealing with thoughts, dealing with negative thoughts, dealing with destructive thoughts, and so on and so forth. Now, let's just set the stage and explain a bit how we're breaking this down and what we're trying to really tackle. Okay. Because to understand the difficulty with implementing the concepts of mindfulness, and particularly the concept of letting go, we need to understand what really the issue is. What is the difficulty? Why is it so difficult, right? As we know, the Talmud tells us, we've mentioned this many times, Yediat HaMakah Chatzi Refuah, knowing the diagnosis is half the cure. Okay. So in order to understand this, if we summarize the concept of mindfulness and being mindful and aware and present, mindfulness requires a number of skills. Okay. Some of them more difficult than others. And essentially what I want to break it down into is three general areas, three skills. So the first is the ability to focus. In other words, even if there's no distracting thoughts, even if there's nothing going on, just the ability to pay attention. Now, that's a difficult thing. Nowadays, people's attention span has been radically reduced. Anyone who's ever taught in a classroom will know that. People just like things in very, very short spurts because everything's changing. Stimulus is changing all the time. And people's ability today just regular to focus and to pay attention to anything for a longer period of time is actually very difficult for a lot of people. Even if there's no problems, even if there's no challenge, there's no past baggage, future worry, it's nothing to do with it. Just the simple concept of being aware, of actually stopping and being fully present and not rushing from the one thing to the other. I remember I showed you a little clip of John Kabat-Zinn who said when you wake up in the morning and you take a shower, you need to examine who else is in the shower with you. In other words, all the people that are in the office and all the appointments that you have that day, just relax, pay attention. You're having a shower, enjoy it. You don't have to do it for very long, but just be present, you know? How many of us talk to people and while we're talking to people are thinking about a thousand other things, we're just not focusing on the conversation. Not even because we're not interested. We might be very interested in the person we're talking to just because we actually find it difficult to concentrate, right? That's a problem. So that's one skill, that's a critical skill in the process of mindfulness. The other is the ability to, it's what I call fulfillment. In other words, it's the ability to find inner peace, inner tranquility, right? Because being aware and being focused is not just about being aware and being focused. It's about enjoying the moment. When I say enjoying the moment, it's about feeling, it's about finding meaning and purpose and inner fulfillment and therefore inner tranquility in what you're experiencing at the moment. So sometimes you can be fully aware, you can force yourself to concentrate, but you're tense. Have you ever had that? Like you're concentrating, but you're tense. You just can't wait till this is over. Now you might be fully present to where you are, but you're not really there because you just can't wait till it's over, even though you force yourself to be fully focused. But that's not proper mindfulness. Proper mindfulness means when you actually are finding meaning and purpose, and therefore savoring and enjoying almost what you're doing. Okay. And the last thing is to deal with intruding thoughts. And this is a hard one, because the thoughts that intrude are thoughts that create all kinds of emotions. Now, the mind wanders, and the mind is full of thoughts, especially if something happens that's not even so major, but even if it's a little bit challenging, the barrage of thoughts that come into our mind is amazing. And those thoughts create all types of different emotional consequences. Right. And they make it very difficult to focus and to concentrate on the present. Now, the skill to deal with these intruding thoughts is a completely different idea than the skill to focus. It's two different things. What do I mean? Let me explain. Let me give you an analogy of the bus driver. Okay. A good driver, a driver's driving a bus, A good driver is someone who can focus on the road, who's able to focus, who's able to create a journey which is smooth. He knows what he's doing, he's aware of the things happening on the road, he's careful, he's responsible, he's concentrating, he's a good driver. Maybe I'm giving an analogy of driving, not because I always do, but because my wife is still traumatized about the driving in Israel. She said, nothing could be a perfect experience, everything's going to have some dark side to it. So her dark side of Israel was the driving. Talk about multitasking, I don't know how they do it. Like it's anyway. So you have a driver who's focused, okay. The second thing is you can have a driver who's driving a bus who's an excellent driver, but he has really bad passengers. Okay, it's the passengers that are screaming, they're complaining, they're fighting. If you want to see again, go to Israel, take an egged bus, you see what I mean, right? And it makes it very difficult for the driver to concentrate. In other words, it might be an excellent driver. Now, a driver that's not a good driver, in other words, a driver that can't concentrate, that driver can't concentrate even if the bus is empty. So that's just a bad driver. Whatever vehicle that driver drives is going to be a problem. But when you have a good driver that's fully aware and very focused and concentrating and drives smoothly, but has really distracting passengers, the passengers make it almost impossible to drive. He's a good driver, but the passengers are the problem. Okay. So the same thing is this analogy describes this process. Mindfulness requires you to be a good driver, first of all. In other words, any experience of mindfulness, you can get up in the morning, you can be having a smooth day, you can have no worry in the world, but you still need to be a good driver. You need to know how to focus. To be mindful, to be present, to enjoy the moment, we need to know how to be aware of the good things in life, aware of the blessings, gratitude, aware of what's happening, aware of what we're doing, aware of our breathing, aware of our eating, aware of our spirituality, aware of our soul, all these things we spoke about so many times. You need to develop the skill to be able to concentrate and to concentrate for a longer period of time than our normal very short attention span. Right? That's step one. In a way, that's a bit easier to achieve. It takes a lot of practice. There are a lot of exercises that can help us do it, but it's kind of more achievable if you think about it. And we'll talk about that soon. The much more difficult part, and I think this is where we need to ask ourselves the question of how, is when we have the passengers get on board, the negative passengers. And let me give you an example, right? Because at any given moment, we have so many different thoughts based on our experiences of what happened half an hour ago or yesterday or last month, which we're still carrying with us, that those thoughts then create all these different types of emotions. Like, for example, things like resentment, right? When we get upset with someone, resentment is a very difficult passenger and a difficult passenger to kick off the bus. Worry and anxiety is something we all suffer from, right? We worry that things won't work out. Sometimes there's things which we should be enjoying, but we worry. The planning's not going accordingly. The person's not feeling well. The plan might fall apart. The person might not arrive. People won't keep their commitments, whatever the case is, or something more serious. But anxiety and worry is an intruding thought that we carry with us that often, even when the worry and the anxiety is not relevant now, it's about something that's going to happen a week from now, but it disturbs me experiencing life now. And then we don't maximize the full potential of the moment now because we have an annoying passenger, the worry, the anxiety. Ego and insecurity is one that's so incredible, right? We carry egocentric feelings with us. We get threatened. We feel insecure. We worry about what people are thinking about it. We get upset because people invaded our space, or we think they invaded our space, or we think they undermined us when they didn't really. And so on and so forth. We all suffer from ego. We're all born with an ego. We all have to deal with an ego. And we all have these feelings sometimes that stem from feelings of ego which get in the way. Jealousy. Pain. Pain can be something. We've experienced something very painful. And that's fine. We've talked about that. And sometimes we need to go through a period where we're experiencing pain. But the problem is sometimes the lingering pain, the pain continues, the emotional pain, even the physical pain, but especially emotional pain or psychological pain, continues and then it stays on board. And again, it's one of those passengers on the bus. Or sadness. We experience something that's difficult and we're sad. Sadness is something that draws us down as well. So all these things are what we call the passengers on the bus. These are the invading thoughts that often come in from the past or from the future. They very often, most often in fact, have nothing to do with the present. That's the interesting part about it. And that's why we need to really deal with it to such an extent. They have nothing to do with the present. They have to do with something that happened or has something that's going to happen. We are upset about something that happened. We're angry about something that happened. We feel jealousy about something that happened. Or we're worried and anxious about something that's going to happen or might not happen or might yes happen. It's very often or most often got nothing to do with the future. It's just an annoying passenger interfering with our ability to focus on the now. We might even know how to focus. We might be good at focusing. We might be good at concentrating, but we're unable to do that because the passenger is interfering. And we need to know, how do we engage with that passenger? How do we get rid of the passenger? Do we get rid of it? How do we calm it down? And so on and so forth. And of course, these could be big issues or small issues. These could be a small setback or a big one. It could be personality issues that come from our own personality, or it could be coming from a crisis that comes from the outside. It could be a tragedy, God forbid. All of these things we need to deal with. How do we deal with those intruding thoughts that allow us not to be able to experience the moment? In other words, how do we let go? Let go of what? Let go of those foreign, intruding, invading thoughts that really have nothing to do with what I'm doing now, but yet standing in the way and making me judge the present moment differently, making me underestimate or undervalue the present moment, and taking away the ability to be able to focus on the present moment in a proper way. Are we clear? Is this, yeah? Okay. Now, there are different models, even in modern psychology. And again, I'm always scared to talk about these things because there's people far more qualified here in the audience, but so my limited knowledge, put it that way. But in modern day literature, there's lots of different ways of dealing with these things. And I mentioned the book that I'm reading called The Reality Slap by Russ Harris, and he bases it on something which I explained called ACT, which is acceptance commitment therapy, which is a bit different from what they call the normal model of CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. And the truth is, both models are good, and lots of models are good, and we need a bit of both. Although I'm going to concentrate a lot on his particular model. Well, not his model, but I'm saying the model that he based himself on. But sometimes there's a concept where we replace the thoughts, where we learn to replace the thoughts with more positive thoughts. So we have those thoughts that are intruding, invading our mind and not letting us concentrate, not letting us experience the full moment. Most of them are negative. We need to learn sometimes to substitute, either to get rid of them, to push them away, or to replace them and substitute them with much more positive messages, that we play in our brain and so on and so forth. However, that doesn't always work. Sometimes they just don't go away. They come back, or they come back in different forms. So therefore you have this model, which we're going to talk about, which is the acceptance and commitment therapy, which is much more about actually not necessarily substituting him or driving him away, but actually recognizing that they're there. The passenger is staying on the bus, not going anywhere. It's a matter of learning how to manage the passenger and how to disconnect from the passenger and how to not let the passenger get in the way of the driving. So that's some of the things that we're gonna talk about. So in summary, therefore, just let's summarize what we've done till now. Basically, we're going to concentrate on three areas. First of all, strategies of how to create a general focus, learning to focus. We're going to talk about the concept of values, because values is really what allows the mindfulness to result in inner fulfillment and to be able to save every moment. And then there's the concept of how to engage with the passengers, how to engage with those invading thoughts. So, as I said, we're going to explore this and expand this and develop it over the next few weeks, but for the rest of today, I want to just spend the rest of the time with some thoughts and strategies and then expand them and explore them over the next few weeks. So I want to just talk about three things. First thing I want to talk about is the concept which we call in Kabbalah the concept of da'at. Right? And just revisit, I know we've done this, I'm sure, sometime before, but just to revisit this idea of why is it sometimes so difficult to put theory into practice? Okay. And the reason is as follows. Because to put theory into practice, we need to transform an intellectual idea into an emotional feeling. Okay, let's just explore this for a moment. We know that we've talked about this before, there's the head, the heart. The head is the seat of intellect where we think about ideas, we develop ideas, we explore ideas, we come up with theories, we make decisions, and so on. And then there's the heart, which is the seat of the emotion. Now, Kabbalah talks about this idea, and we mentioned it before, about the narrowness of the throat. called Meitzar HaGaron, which is the traffic jam that happens between the head and the heart. What that means is that what happens often is that what we think about in our head, even what we're fully convinced in our head, we might be extremely passionate. You can have someone get up and give a lecture where they're extremely passionate about a particular idea, and then you find out that they have no connection to this idea whatsoever. They haven't implemented it at all. Why? Because you can be fully convinced about something in your mind, and it remains an intellectual idea. For you to live by that idea, it needs to transition from the world of intellect to the world of feeling, the world of emotion. Why? Let's just explore this for a moment and revisit it. Our two main players, our two main drivers in our personality is intellect and feeling, intellect and emotion. Okay? And they each are critical and they each have a different function. Angels and animals, their main driver is emotion. They don't have intellect. I mean, they have intellect, but it's not a critical driver. Why? Because the power of intellect is given mainly to the human being. The reason is because it's the human being who can make a choice. Right? In other words, the power of intellect, the power of seichel, as we call it, the power to think, is critical to the uniqueness of what it is to be human. Why? Because the definition of intellect, hear this carefully because this is going to be the key to the next part. The definition of intellect is that it's not me. The definition of intellect is that it's objective. Okay? The definition of intellect is that I'm taking something outside of me and understanding it. You follow? In other words, I might have a particular personality. I might want to do something. I might want to insult someone. I might want to do something immoral. I might want to make a bad decision. But I'm able to export an idea which is outside of me, which is contrary to the way I feel and think, and absorb it, which is how I make a decision. In other words, I'm able to listen to you, for example, and say, yes, you're making sense. It's not what I feel. I had this morning. Someone, a relative of mine, called me from overseas to ask me advice about reacting to something that someone had said to them. And the preface was, my wife said I should ask you for advice. Basically, the wife had the right answer, and she just didn't want to force it on them. So she sent him to me. I said, mate, listen to your wife. I said, generally, it's a good idea. No, okay. I said, so he says to me, it's a classic story. He says to me, look, I have this relationship with this person. They wanted me to do something. His wife called my whole story. His wife called my wife. Absolute chutzpah. I want to just write the guy an email and just tell him the way it is. Now, why is he saying that? Because that's what he feels. And because he feels, he rationalizes it that it makes sense. So I'm the person of the outside. He's asking me advice. I said, look, you're asking me advice, so I'm going to tell you the truth, right? I said, what exactly are you going to achieve? No, he's got to know. I said, but is he going to change? What are you actually, let's just analyze this for a moment. What are you going to achieve? I said, you're going to make him upset. He's going to be really offended. I happen to know the person. I know how he thinks a little bit. You're going to insult the person. He's going to feel offended. He's not going to change. He's not going to see your point. Because the premise you have to always work on is you don't change other people, you don't change yourself, right? And it's not going to work. Why don't you just send him a nice, courteous email? Thanks for your request. I'm not available on that day to do what you wanted me to do. But he says, but I don't want to do that. I said, that's exactly the point. I said, that's the point. That's why you're asking me, right? Of course you don't want to do that. Because it doesn't fit into what you understand. What you want to do makes sense on your emotional level. It's what you feel. But if you're asking me for advice, it means you're opening, you're not just doing it because your wife forced you, you're opening yourself to another idea. So let me plant your idea. I'm asking you to follow my idea, and I know it's not what you want to do, but you're going to feel good at the end because it's going to work. Okay. Now that's okay for a one-time thing. So he can do that. He can make a decision. So that's the power of intellect. He can say either, well, you're right, or okay, begrudgingly I'm right, or whatever the case is. and take an idea from outside of him, bring it into him, and do something different to what his personality disposition is. Okay? That's okay on a one-time thing. It's longer, long-term. In other words, to do something, to live a certain way long-term, to change our ways, to change our way of behavior a bit more long-term based on an idea which is coming from the outside is difficult because that's you've got to sustain that, and that takes longer. So basically the way it works is like this. Intellect is so powerful because it's objective, because it comes from the outside, because it's detached. That's why I can take a different idea that's different to me. The problem is, the greatness of intellect is its downfall, that it's not me. And therefore it's very hard to absorb. Because when I change my way of thinking, when I change my way of living, that's me. See, a person's emotions, what is the role of emotions? The role of emotions that a person has is passion, life, vibrancy. In other words, you know, we think the greatness of the human being is the head, but the truth is it's also the heart, because who am I? Who am I is not my mind. Who am I is my heart. Who am I is my feeling. Who am I is my passion. Where's the personality live? Where does my personality live? In my heart, not in my head. My head can go anywhere. I can theorize the right, the left, the middle, whatever you want. Because that's the power of intellect. That's its greatness and that's its weakness. Because me, the personality, me, is what I feel, not what I think. Are we okay? Yeah? So the greatness of the intellect is its downfall, and that's the whole problem. The problem is that when I think about something, in order for it to really affect me, it's got to make a transition. It's got to travel from the head and somehow become part of my heart. Somehow I've got to connect to it on some level. It's got to become part of my personality. It's got to become part of my passion. And that's where Kabbalah gives the metaphor that it gets stuck in the throat. It's a very narrow road. And on the way down from the head to the throat, it gets stuck and it never makes it there. It's a detachment. We have cognitive dissonance because of that. So what's the answer? So we know that in the 10 powers of the soul, we have 3 that are intellectual, correct? And the 3 that are intellectual, we've talked about this many times, is Chachma, Bina, and Daat. Chachma and Bina are the 2 building blocks of honest intellectualization. Chachma is the conception of a new idea. Chachma is very critical because Chachma means it's the spark of something new. It's the openness to listen to something new. It's the openness to say, wow, let me try a different idea. Let me experience a paradigm shift. Let me see if I can look at this a different way. Not the way I'm always used to looking at it. Not the way I'm stuck in always doing it. But I look at it a different way. And you get a kind of a newness. You get a kind of creativity where you say, that's a good idea. But then you have to bring it down to Bina. Bina, the word Bina means a binyan, a building. Where you give it breadth, you give it depth, you give it it becomes a whole intellectual edifice. It becomes something you really fully comprehend and you fully understand. So that's how you develop an idea, Chachma and Bina. However, when you finish with Chachma and Bina, it's still just intellectual. And it still doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to change you, at least long term. Or you're able to do it long term. So therefore, we have the third one called Da'at, commonly mistranslated as knowledge. Da'at is not knowledge. Da'at means connection. In the Torah, if you look in the beginning of the Torah, particularly in Genesis, the word vayeda, to know, is actually an expression used with regard to intimacy. It says, Adam knew his wife. Abraham knew Sarah, and so on and so forth. That means they were intimate and they gave birth to children. In Kabbalah, the intellect, the intellectual capacities, Chachma and Bina, are called the father and the mother. Chachma is the male, Bina is the female. Chachma is the spark of newness, that's the conception, that's the male contribution. Bina is the female idea, where you develop an idea and it's nurtured, it's like the pregnancy, where you're actually able to build the entire child. In order for that to work, in order for there to be an experience like that with the birth of a child, you need the two together, and you need the intimacy, you need the connection. And that's the concept of Da'at. What does that mean? This is an important introduction. If we're talking about implementing ideas, and we're talking about bringing things from theory to practice, this is a critical concept. The idea of Da'at means, where you take an idea, and this is a very hard thing to do, where you take an idea, even an idea that you fully understand, but you connect to the idea. What do I mean? In other words, you contemplate it and you think about it enough times, right? Until it starts becoming you. It chips away from the world of intellect into your personality. You start to feel a living connection with the idea that is really not you. Because by definition, remember, an intellectual idea means it's from the outside. It's not you. But when you think about it enough and you meditate on it, really, or the word that's used in Kabbalistic teachings is hitbonanut. Hitbonanut means that you deeply think about it and you play it in your mind again and again and again and again. And you set aside time to do that and you concentrate on it and you connect to it, you start to feel it. It starts to transition from the intellectual idea to something that's actually part of your emotional personality. Right? So I mention that because any concept that we talk about, one of the reasons that it's hard to put something into practice is because learning about it once or even 10 times is never going to be enough, because it remains an intellectual idea, and intellect and emotion are two different worlds. They actually are two different worlds. That's what's very difficult for the one to become the other. That's why it gets stuck on the way. So whenever a person really wants to be serious about having an idea, and this is true on all levels, it's true on spirituality and emotionally, anything, right? If we want to grow in life, it means we want to change. Yes, one of the ways to do it is action, just doing it. But particularly when we're talking about mindsets and attitudes and feelings and, you know, divorcing ourselves from negative thoughts and things like that, and building up that sort of letting go process and ability, the only way to do it is to take an idea which we fully understand and we think we fully mastered, but we fail to realize that we fully mastered it on an intellectual level, but it hasn't yet become us. And therefore, if we're serious about this, one of the strategies, and perhaps the first strategy, is that to take concepts that we learn and to set aside time every day, not when the crisis comes, I'm talking about before the crisis comes, to build up the exercise, to build up the muscle, right? And to set aside 5-10 minutes to actually contemplate these ideas, think about them, think about what they mean to me, think about how they could be implemented, think about how we'll try and implement it in times when it's difficult and so on and so forth. And the more we meditate on it and think about it and contemplate it, the more it becomes us, and the more chance we have of it actually affecting us. So that's the first thing. It's a concept of called da'at, that idea, and it's an important idea to explore before we go into the other strategies. The second thing that I want to talk about is, just as an introduction, is to learn to do the easier one first. In other words, to learn just to build up general concentration exercises. The more we exercise, because we live in a world which is so distracting, because we live in a world where it's so difficult to concentrate, we need every day, in whatever way we choose, to practice being mindful, to practice paying attention. That sounds easy, but it's very not easy. It's not easy at all, right? And it can be through a number of ways. It might be through mindfulness meditations, you know, the breathing thing. We talked about this before, about learning to breathe. Most of us are not even aware that we're breathing unless we have a problem with our breathing. But right, unless we get an asthma attack, then we know we're breathing. But otherwise, we don't even notice that we're breathing. And breathing is the most amazing thing. We talked about this before. Breathing, in fact, on a Jewish level, breathing is the vehicle. Neshima, which is the word for breathing in Hebrew, is the vehicle for the neshama, as we talked about, right? So when we breathe, that's really where our life force is living. That's when we think about the gift that God gave us, the gift of life. So just that, every day, spending a few minutes breathing in and breathing out for a few minutes, just concentrating, right? The modeani, the gratitude, making, you know, recently I met someone who was in a mindfulness, I don't know which mindfulness lecture, isn't this? And it was beautiful feedback to say that since she came, every morning she concentrates for a few minutes on the modeani and started saying, modeani, it's the most wonderful mindful thing to do. Just to get up and before we rush into the day, concentrate. I'm alive. I thank God for the soul. I thank God for giving me back my soul, a refreshed soul. Hopefully it's going to be a good day. It's going to be a positive day, a refreshed day, a new beginning. Each day is a new beginning. That's an incredibly powerful thing. Right? Taking concepts that you like from mindfulness and going back to the da'at idea and just setting aside time every day to think about them. Maybe it's before lunch, maybe it's after lunch. But practicing, just taking a few minutes every day, thinking about the idea that God recreates the world every minute. Think about the morning blessings, if that's what works for you. Just setting aside during the day intervals where we just stop, put everything aside, and just concentrate. We also, part of learning to concentrate and the exercise of learning to concentrate is to learn to remove distractions. I struggle with this one, so I'm sharing it with you. but I've started to do it. I'm happy to report. I've started to have a time every day where I just put away the phone. Now, I've got to be honest, it's difficult, right? It's difficult because, I don't know. Actually, I'm not even sure why it's difficult. It just is difficult, right? Because you think, you know, in that hour, someone's going to call that's really, really important, as if, you know, the world's going to stop, you know. Like, what did they do 20 years ago? So they didn't get through to you. So they waited till there was a phone, right? But I don't know if you ever tried this. Actually, I don't mean when you're sleeping, by the way. I mean some people need this when they're sleeping too. But I'm just talking about during the day. Just put the phone in the drawer for an hour. And just don't answer the phone or check a WhatsApp or an SMS for an hour, right? For some of you this might be easy. Some of you looking at me like I'm crazy. But yeah, for some you're lucky. But if you can do this. But some people, it's very difficult. But we need to learn, because part of the inability to concentrate is the distractions that we have. And technology is the chief guilty party of distractions. So we need to just learn. I mean, technology is a wonderful thing, and we can use it. But we also need to learn not to control us. We need to control it. And we need to set aside time every day to do that, to make sure that we're not being disturbed. One of the things also I think is unbelievable, and I'm going to share with you a personal sort of recent story with me, is to train ourselves to concentrate in bite sizes, like small sections. So I've been on a plane a bit lately, as you know. Now I've shared this with you before. I'm sharing this with you because mindfulness is something we all need to work on, and it's a difficult thing to do in our world. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and not always succeeding, but I'm not going to tell you those stories. So when I tell you this, I'm just telling you because I'll tell you the things that work, okay? So for me, for example, when I'm on a plane, I'm a very restless traveler, right? In fact, someone, a complete stranger, once said this to me on a plane from Melbourne to Sydney, mind you, it wasn't even overseas. And I'm looking out the window and I'm fidgeting. I guess I was being annoying. So after a while, she couldn't take it anymore. She turns to me, she says, "You're a nervous traveler, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, to come to think of it, you're probably right." I wasn't nervous about anything. It's just, I'm a restless traveler. I hate to be confined in one spot for who knows how long. And it's ridiculous, because every time I come off a plane, the only good thing I do have on a plane, which is better than some people's, I'm able to sleep. So when I'm sleeping, I'm okay. But if I'm awake, if it's a day flight particularly, it's impossible, right? And I always come off a plane feeling empty, because here I just had like 10 hours and I could have gotten so much done. And I didn't do it because, like, I'm just restless, right? So I've been thinking about this whole concept recently, and this time when I started, no, this is not going to work. I need to work on this, right? So I took stuff to do, stuff that's valuable, stuff that I know I can accomplish, stuff that I can read, stuff that I can think. I was with my daughter part of the time, things I could do with her maybe, that, you know, she's bonding time, all valuable stuff, all things that you, if you do it properly, you can find fulfillment. But I realized the only way it's going to work for me is if I play games with myself. In other words, I don't commit to like being mindful the entire flight, because that's just not going to happen, right? But I'll make myself a goal. So I'll open up a book, or I'll open up something that I'm studying or learning, and I'm saying, you know what, I'm now going to do this for the next 10 minutes or the next 3 pages. Nothing's going to faze me. I'm not going to concentrate anything else. I'm not going to look out the window. I'm just going to do this for 10 minutes, and it works. And the great thing about it is, if you do it for 10 minutes, you kind of build an appetite to do it for another 10 minutes. So you do it in small sizes, but it's a really, really important thing to do, because, and I'm not talking about being in a stressful situation where there's foreign thoughts intruding. I'm talking about learning to drive. I'm not talking about letting the passengers not disturb us. You understand the difference? There's a very, very big difference. The next part is much harder. The next part, having intruding thoughts not distract you, that's very, very difficult. I'm talking about where there's no problem. It's just you're in a restless state, as some people are on an airplane, right? You're in a restless state, or you're just finding it difficult, or you're in a restless mood, or whatever the case is, and you're just fidgety, and you're flying all over the place, and you're not able to properly concentrate. So one of the training exercises to do then is to actually work on taking just 5 minutes at a time, or 10 minutes at a time, and just forcing yourself, putting in tremendous effort, just to concentrate and to focus for those 10 minutes. And then you say to yourself, after that, I'll give myself a break, I'll stop concentrating. But to do it in bite sizes, then take a break and come back and do it. And the The ability of doing that is amazing because it actually trains the mind to focus. And every time you do it, it becomes easier. So I think one of the, if you're talking about just in the general mindfulness exercises, the ability to learn to focus, one of the great mistakes people make is they overdo it, like all resolutions. When you overreach and you make unrealistic expectations, it doesn't work. But if you put it into bite size, you say, look, I know I'm restless, I know I should be focusing, but I'm not. That's my state right now, so let's just do it in small sizes. You do it in small sizes, A, you're training the mind to focus, B, you're building up that muscle, and it becomes easier generally to become a focused person. Now, the third thing I was going to go into is to begin the discussion, which is really the bulk of what I'm going to talk about in the next few weeks, which is the most difficult part. The most difficult part is when you have stressful situations, whether it's coming from personality or it's coming from experiences that we have experienced, where we have thoughts from the past and the future intruding and invading and stopping us from doing what we need to do. And that's where it's much, much more difficult. The point I'll just make quickly before we go into at length next week is this concept of acceptance. One of the things we need to understand is that sometimes we get frustrated when we have negative thoughts. And people do that. They get disappointed with themselves. You know, why am I feeling jealous? Why am I feeling uneasy? Why am I feeling threatened? You know, why do I continuously feel hurt about what that person said to me, and it's paralyzing me for what I have to concentrate on and experience in this day, right? One of the things we have to come to terms with is that we're not perfect, and that we need to accept that we do have these thoughts. Once we accept that we have them, then it's a matter of understanding where they come from, and when you understand where they come from, then we can deal with them. So in other words, it's understanding, going back to our bus analogy, the passenger is there for the ride. He's not getting off. It's now up to me, so I need to come to terms with that. That itself is a process of how I come to terms with that. When I come to terms with that and I realize that the passenger is there, now I need to be able to know, so how I'm going to deal with it. In other words, the passenger's moved in, he's not getting off the bus anytime soon, so now I need to know, what am I going to do with it? And when we learn to do that, then we can actually detach from the thoughts. We can learn to let it be there, but at the same time, not let it affect us. It's a very difficult process, but we can do it, and that's part of what the human being is about, that we can actually learn to do that. We can learn to detach from the past and the present in that way and fully experience the now. How to do that, that's complicated, and that's what we're going to try. That's mainly what we're going to try and build up over the next couple of weeks. Have a wonderful week and a wonderful day.